What's up, EO hackers? Welcome to the Acolyte Q&A live stream, January 2024, even though I probably said 2023 in the title, like a weirdo. But I'm also on European time zone right now, so who cares, right? I'll edit it later. But yeah. So welcome to the show. I am answering Q&A by our Acolyte members. Acolyte members are people who have our Journeyman membership, which gives them access to most of our private content. And then, which, by the way, we'll be adding seasons 14, part 1, and season 19 to the Journeyman membership in the very near future, just so you guys know. You don't want to do that. And then Acolytes are just basically the upgrade from there. They're the ones that get first dibs on Typing Famous People streams. They also get the ability to ask one question that makes it into the Acolyte Q&A stream. Fair warning, though, there is a very big backlog in the questions, and at the rate that we're going, we will catch up, but if you ask a question, you may have to wait at least 30 to 60 days for it to go to basically get on the stream, but we're chewing up questions quick and we are catching up. So hopefully by March or April, we should be like current with all of our questions because I'm doing extra questions. So yeah. But yes, it is a Q&A. Thank you, Demya. I don't even know how to say your name. Whatever. Also, we have our fabulous Christmas tree. It's necessary to stay up because according to tradition from our very own Potsy, the Christmas tree is to stay up until January 6th. I had no idea this was a tradition, but he made it very abundantly clear that this was a thing. So who am I to argue with tradition? You know, to use as an excuse to, not take it down. It is nice. Laser Gun put it together, actually. I got to give her full credit on it. She also chose the color scheme on it, and it's very nice. And a Big K, when he comes and sees the tree, he's like, tree, tree. And then he sees like pictures of me or her and he says our names as he walks by. It's like the cutest thing in the world. And I jive cute every time. So, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know either. Like, dude, apparently this is like something you could look up on the internet. But he comes from Ohio. And in Ohio, apparently, and I don't, it could be elsewhere. I have no clue. But apparently it's a thing. So. Yeah, I would like some of that. We need a chance, very much. Yeah, thanks. All right, cool. Let's get on with the show, guys. Yes, Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Aegis. Good to see you again. All right, so first question of the night is, what does each type need and want sexually, and how do they like to give in the bedroom? Wow, what a question. And obviously this question is too big for an Acolyte question because this would take an entire episode to explain. But I'll do my best to sum up. So what does each type want and need sexually? Well, SI users like to receive a very good experience, and SE users like to give them a good experience. Basically, that's kind of what it is, you know, simply what it's about. It gets a little bit weird, though, when women are extroverted sensors and men are introverted sensors, because usually men take the introverted sensing or the extroverted sensing role, since they're the ones on top, because usually, typically, the one on top is the SE user and the one on the bottom is the SI user, traditionally speaking, from a sexual practice perspective. I would like some of that. Thank you. So. So based on that, that's kind of like how it is from a type perspective, but ultimately it's up to the man. The man decides that, essentially. Let the man lead in the bedroom. It's really not hard. This comes from a book called Don't Let Her Lead by Zach Rohde, but also Irresistibly Feminine by Zach Rohde. Because regardless of your type, you still have to master sexuality from a feminine, masculine-feminine approach. So like actually read those books. These books are a cornerstone in the teaching that we have in our men's group and our women's group. So that's like a really big deal. God, that's good. That's so good. The blueberry notes do it every time. I'm so glad Bayonet sent these. Like, oh, they're so good.
Bayonet's amazing.
Bayonet is amazing. I tried to like branch out to other ones, but I always keep coming back to the La Raña Azulejo every time. Every time. It's so good. All right. So, anyway, yeah, this question is way too advanced for an Acolyte Q&A. And folks, like if you're submitting like an advanced question like this, where it's like too advanced, you know, because it's just too big, try to focus it down, and you can just resubmit. It's fine. We'll accept it. So just keeping you all aware of the Acolyte questions and how that works. So also, Real Love Language, the course, is coming out very soon. The pre-order will be up for it very soon. I also know that for a little bit in the month of January, the How to Type Yourself course's pre-order pricing was extended because some people had a hard time with it due to the holidays. So we're just giving it a little bit extra access. But we are hoping to have Real Love Language launched before Valentine's Day currently. So just keeping you guys posted on that course. It will be the biggest course we've ever done other than Ego Hacking Your Fear. And it would be the most insightful thing that you've ever learned in terms of relationships in your life. So just keep you guys apprised of that. Next question. Oh, by the way, what each type need to want sexually? Like, make it about a specific type next time. And then just resubmit your question. That's fine. And we'll just add it into the queue. So it'll get there. Anyway, next question is, what can ENTP women do to become more worthy? Oh, what a great question. This is a great question. So the reason why ENTP women struggle with worthiness is due to extroverted feeling child. Thanks for cleaning that out. Thank you so much. So extroverted feeling child, when it comes to ENTP women, they have this problem where they can be like overly self-deprecating, especially if they have extroverted feeling feminine primary, okay? Which is what happens if they are a SDSF ENTP variant, especially, you know, in a woman. Extroverted feeling child feminine primary function is very interesting. They're willing, they're the ultimate people pleaser. Yep, calling you out, bubs. Sorry. But as the ultimate people pleaser, they end up, you know, they really struggle with their own sense of self-worthiness. Basically, it's due to FI trickster, essentially. But what they need to do is that they have to have the self-discipline to treat themselves with self-respect or utilize their cognitive origin, their secondary cognitive origin of reverence to revere themselves enough without them feeling too guilty for doing so. Because they should stop feeling bad for taking care of themselves. They should stop feeling bad for respecting themselves before they are actually willing to help somebody else. That's the thing. Oftentimes, ENTP women sacrifice helping other people in exchange for their own self-respect, basically. And that could be a really big problem. And it's kind of self-abusive to a point. I would recommend ENTP women read the book When Helping Hurts. Because when it comes to extroverted feeling optimistic, which is extroverted feeling child, extroverted feeling hero, those four types between ESTP, ENTP, ENFJ, and ESFJ, those four types in women especially struggle with codependence. So they need to be reading books like When Helping Hurts or Codependent No More. It's absolutely critical that they do that. And then as a result of their, you know, beating their struggle of codependence, they beat that struggle by learning how to become more worthy and have a higher sense of self-worth. It's not a higher sense of self-esteem. That's different. Self-esteem is related to extroverted thinking and introverted feeling, whereas, you know, trying to increase one's worthiness is increasing one's acceptability, which is extroverted feeling God function, but it's also a TIFE, cognitive function axis, basically, from that point of view. So that's what can ENTP women do to become more worthy. By the way, guys, you can ask like little related questions or make statements and comments related to the specific questions, and I might actually answer that as an addendum to the question that I just answered. Just giving you guys a heads up. Next question. What are the main challenges for an INFJ when it comes to working closely with an ESTJ? For example, when the ESTJ becomes the INFJ's boss, how do the dynamics for the natural pair change if the relationship is mostly work-related? Is it still a potentially good match? Okay, when someone's talking about good match, I think the context here is as like, what happens when the ESTJ becomes the INFJ's boss, but the INFJ has a crush on the ESTJ? I think that's what the context of this question actually is, okay? The reality situation, and also it's really lame that this question does not include which person is the man or a woman. Please include details, guys, when you're asking these questions, because my answers change as simple, like depending on who's the woman, who's the man. Like, I need to know that information. Or if this is a man-to-man situation or a woman-to-woman situation. Like, I need details, guys. I can't do anything without information, okay? So make sure you're asking these questions properly, okay? So how the dynamics of natural pair change? It doesn't change. It doesn't change at all, because unless they're two women, if it's two women, then there's going to be conflict. There's just going to be conflict. The thing about camaraderie, and I'm going to be talking about this a little bit more in depth, I think cutting edge this month, but the thing about camaraderie that's really important to remember is that when I was talking to Bayonet about this earlier today, but the thing about camaraderie is that women have this thing where they cognitive project more than men do. They project themselves onto other people more than men do, and it's because of their solipsism. So when they're projecting themselves, they're projecting traits onto someone else that they identify with. So if a woman returns those traits back, that means they identify with each other, which is actually what camaraderie is identifying with each other. And if they identify with each other, it tells their woman brain that they don't have to compete with one another. That's the point. It's all about identifying with the other woman. That is how it is. And women's brains are set up this way so they can have many women to one man relationships, basically, where the women are not competing with each other under that one man's leadership, and at this, evolutionary and biologically speaking, but also because given that they have this thing where, you know, if a man is an SI user, all the girls that he's with are SE users, or if a man is an SE user, all the girls that he's with are SI users. And because of that, there's no competition. They don't have to compete with one another, you know, psychologically speaking, underneath the same roof, which reduces conflict and increases peace under the roof, which is fantastic. So when it comes to their perception functions, they identify with each other from a perception perspective. And because of that, they don't see each other as competition, just naturally. And that's actually how women can have the deepest relationships as a result of that. So in a woman-to-woman relationship, ESTJ, INFJ, this wouldn't work out. We'd just blow up in their face completely. You'd completely blow up in their face, which I don't recommend. Now, if it's a man or a woman, or a man-to-man relationship in this work situation, then it's completely fine. Just act natural. Like, the dynamics don't really change. The difference is that the workplace is not a sexual zone for men. It's not safe for men to initiate, from a relationship perspective in the workplace. It's just not. It's safer for women. Unless, of course, it is Soul Temple people. If these people were Soul Temple, then it would be okay. And one of them is Soul Temple. So because of that, Soul Temple and Mind Temple in the workplace are the ones who actually do get away with workplace sexual relationships. They get away with it pretty easy, even though like there's a social norm that it's not okay. And that's a social norm that Body Temple and Heart Temple really adhere to in the workplace, because from their perspective, it's socially inappropriate to engage in a sexual relationship with a coworker. But my Soul Temple does it all the time, to the point where you can almost assume that it's. The reason why is because Soul Temple usually typically doesn't even have a social circle outside of the workplace. That's why, basically. And then Mind Temple is just taking advantage of the Soul Temple people that act that way. That's all it is. Mind Temple is just taking advantage of that. And then Soul Temple just acts that way by default. Soul Temple types being ISTJ, ENFP, ESTP, and INFJ. And it's so interesting when people, you know, realize that about Soul Temple compared to all the other four temples. The Soul Temple is the one who has their circle of friends mostly in the workplace. And whereas like Body Temple has their circle of friends the least in the workplace. They're like the polar opposite. They don't really want to be friends with anyone in the workplace at all. Versus Heart Temple, who's playing it safe always. Heart Temple's constantly playing it safe. And that's the problem, is Heart Temple plays it way too safe, from that perspective. And Mind Temple is just trying to take advantage, you know, from that point of view. So those are kind of how the dynamics. But, you know, if it's a man and woman, of course it's a good match. And if the ESTJ becomes the INFJ's boss, yeah, that's fine. Hopefully the ESTJ is not a woman. hopefully, because that wouldn't work well, because then there's no need, then she'd be emasculating by default within the context of the work relationship, which means it would be very difficult for the INFJ man to even stay devoted to the ESTJ woman, basically. Next question. What makes Wayfarers willing to throw people under the bus? To protect their reputation. Basically tearing down other people's reputations so that the other people's reputations are either equal to or less than their own reputation. That's basically why. So let's see here. Something came out. Wouldn't that make body and heart tempo more productive in the workplace? Not necessarily. No, not necessarily. I know some ISTPs that absolutely dominate in the workplace, say with ENFJs. Mind Temple can really, really dominate, especially with that initiative, living virtue. They can really dominate in the workplace. The types that struggle the most in the workplace and are the laziest in the workplace are Soul Temple, by far. Soul Temple, absolutely. With the INFJ being the exception, the INFJ usually absolutely kills it. And then they'll burn out because they're either being taken advantage of or they're outshining the master and they get removed, basically. But the rest of the Soul Temple types are usually really bad workers in general, especially in their youth. They're like really bad hires. So like if I was running a fast food franchise, I would avoid hiring Soul Temple types, even though they're the ones most likely to actually apply, you know, from that perspective. So yeah. Okay. And let's see here. But yeah, Wayfarers willing to throw out other people's bus. It's really just about reputation management. That's the main reason. Next question. How can a UDUF ISFP succeed and enjoy a social work career? They're not really going to succeed and enjoy any social work career. You need to get the subconscious focus as soon as possible. Because then they're at risk of potentially offering really bad advice and basically advising people to lean into greed, because ISFPs, while they can be some of the more delusional of the types, ISFPs as an archetype, regardless of their man or woman, they really struggle with projecting themselves on other people. And if they're UDUF, they're projecting their greed onto other people and basically assuming everyone else in their life is just as greedy as they are. It's kind of like a UDUF INTJ or a UDUF ENTP, assuming that everyone else in life is just as manipulative as they are, right? That's another issue entirely. I actually had to deal with that recently with a UDUF ENTP who accused me of being just as manipulative as they were just by projecting. And projection is still continues to be like the main problem that most people face. Projection, cognitive projection basically proves that a person does not have social skills. That's basically what it proves. And the people who do have social skills are the ones who don't project themselves onto other people. You know, I do have to say though, like everyone has a journey with it. And while women struggle with projection the most, what I've noticed is that they can stop projecting the fastest if they actually have a masculine man in their life who is leading them. They can actually stop it the fastest. Whereas men have a harder time projecting themselves on other people, but when they do, they have a harder time getting out of it. So when you're looking at unconscious focused people who project, cognitive project way more than subconscious focused people, because like, for example, a subconscious focused ENTP like myself, you know, very kind and very helpful and towards other people, but I love to be hated. You know what I'm saying? Because that introverted bitterness, people being bitter towards me or having that hatred from envy towards me, like for some reason, I just get off on that. Well, so also does Andrew Tate. He's UDSF as an ENTP. So also does Tony Stark. He's UDSF as an ENTP, you know, Iron Man. So that's basically where that comes from. Hello, Nether Chords. Hello, Brian Henderson. Hello. Good morning. So yes, but yeah, UDUF, ISFP succeed and enjoy in a social work career. I'm not going to see them succeed and enjoy a social career until they get to subconscious focus, basically, where they have to earn the right to be greedy and have confidence in their ability to perform for other people, basically. Okay, remember, if you guys can ask questions, they have to be related to the questions that I'm answering. Okay, so Rose Frequency, I can't answer that question because it's got to stay on topic. So just forgive me. But if you do want to have that question answered, you know, when I'm doing live streams, we open up our promotion, which is the best deal that we have, which is csjoseph.live/essentials. For $300, you get 3 months of Acolyte, which has all of our, basically all of our private content that is not in courses, all of our non-course content, cutting edge podcasts, premium lectures, etc., as well as typing famous people and these acolyte questions for 3 months for $300. Plus you get 30 minutes of coaching, so why not? That's all right, Rose. Welcome to the stream. I'm happy you're here. Thank you for being here and participating. So anyway, next question. Does one-sided attraction or unrequited love ever exist between bronze pairs? Yes. If one person has passed the test of the critic, but the other hasn't? Yes. Answer is yes. Absolutely it does. Remember, the natural pair is the hardest relationship to get into. However, once you're in it, you're in it forever. It doesn't stop. It does not stop. It's a really hard relationship to get to. The golden pair, however, is a very easy relationship to get to, but it's really hard to maintain. It's actually very hard to maintain. And then you have a nice balance with the pedagogue. The pedagogue, it's easy to get into, and it's pretty easy to maintain. It's just not as easy to get into as the golden pair, and it's not as easy to maintain as the natural pair, basically, if you just, you know, kind of look at it from that spectrum point of view. All right, so next question is, how could an SE woman and an SI man have a healthy relationship considering SE and I is masculine and SI and E is feminine? Okay, so the answer to this question actually is the November and December 2023 Cutting Edge videos. If you are an Acolyte member, you can watch those specific Cutting Edge episodes, and that will answer this question. So I'm not going to bother answer the question on the stream. You can just go watch those videos because you have access to that, and then you can get the answer to your question right there since you're a paid member to have this question to begin with. So you're good to go. All right, next question is, which types tend to have the most issues with their identity? Soul Temple. By far, because they have the God function of introverted feeling, which is all about identity. Soul Temple people, even if they're ENFPs or ISTJs, they spend their entire lives, and especially ESTPs and INFJs struggle with it the absolute most. By far, they struggle with it the absolute most. Whereas, like, cause the ESTP is trying to discover their identity, whereas the INFJ is in denial of their identity, basically. They're in denial of it. So That's their issues. Whereas the ENFP is trying to learn how to be okay with their identity, and the ISTJ's identity perspective is they're trying to get other people to be okay with their identity, essentially. That's their struggle. But it's Soul Temple. Soul Temple struggles and has the most issues with their identity. They're the ones who have the most identity crises, and they're also the ones who are on suicide hotlines the most. That's just how it is. They struggle with depression the most, with the exception of maybe the ISTP being the other one who just struggles the absolute most with depression out of all of the 16 types because of their melancholy vice, which is discussed in season 7 episode 11, episode 11, season 7, episode 11 specifically talks about that. Okay, all right, so does the identity crisis of Soul Temple only lead to confusion? It can lead to confusion. How would a Soul Temple avoid this? Basically, trial and error. So one of the things about Soul Temple, what's really cool about them is that they have this love language called role play and fantasy. They love playing out their fantasies. They like trying on other identities, especially in a sexual situation. They love trying on other identities. They like playing with accents, playing with clothes. You know, they're the girls that will play dress up, or the guys that will show up as like a firefighter or something, you know, and play out fantasies in a sexual situation because they're trying on different identities, basically, because it helps them understand their own identity a little bit more. Because they always ask themselves the question, well, what could I be? What could I become? Could I become anything? Am I always going to be this way? Like am I going to constantly change, or am I never going to change? These are the questions that are constantly plaguing them on a regular basis as a Soul Temple. And there was another Soul Temple question. I want to see it. Let's see. Why does having an identity matter, though? Because identity is where you get your character. You can't be a person of good character without identity. Like, seriously. So does that mean that role play is the cure for the Soul Temple identity crisis? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is the cure. A cure. I would want to initiate a role play situation with a soul temple. They do it naturally. They do it naturally. It comes down to how much connection they have with you. And you build connection by having shared activities with them. That's how. All right, next question. That was good. Really nice. All right. So let's see here. How can an ISFP master their trickster function? The answer to that question is actually in the Ego Hacking Your Fear course, specifically the ISFP thing. But really, it just comes down to them having the patience willing to experiment and experiment a lot, leaning into their cognitive origin of discovery, basically, and experimenting. But here's the thing. The ISFP needs to feel like they are in a safe environment or around safe people who have enough patience to allow them the freedom to discover, to explore, and to experiment so that they can master their expert intuition trickster. This is something that I actually go out of my way to do for Bayonet as often as possible and give her that space and that freedom because it's just something that she needs. Because if she doesn't have that, she won't really be able to function, and then she'll feel like that she'll never be able to achieve a legacy, or even actually be a proper augment to building my legacy, et cetera, or being supportive towards my legacy. Because if I take that freedom away from her, which I don't even have to like actively take her freedom away or control her, all I would have to do is just not be patient with her experimenting with how she performs, basically. And if I was impatient with her, it would crush her. So I just don't do that. I will not do that. Now, so Laser Gun, you know, from an INFJ point of view, like from an expert thinking mastery perspective, it's basically that I have to be willing to be consistently on guard for her benefit to make sure that I'm protecting her trickster from the wrong voices, basically. And I show her which voices are worth listening to and which ones are not. And that basically helps guide her in that direction, helps her get to the perspective of expert thinking mastery from that perspective. That's how my masculine leadership would benefit her from that point of view. Because the thing is that, INFJ women especially have this thing where they really struggle with people listening to them because it's part of their emotional makeup. And the thing is that you have to have, again, you could argue patience again, or willpower, but it's mostly patience. But I have to exercise the patience so that through introverted sensing, so that Laser Gun can get to a point where she is safe to talk to me about any topic she wants, no matter if it sounds ridiculous or not. And I make sure that I go out of my way to listen. And it's not just indulging her. It's not just humoring her, as a lot of people actually do to INFJs, especially INFJ women, which is wrong. That is actually morally wrong. You can't do that. That TI child has to be protected from that perspective, just as much as an ISFP's NI child has to be protected from that perspective as well. Because it's their most innocent parts. And to not do these things for these women is utterly ridiculous. And actually, it's child abuse. It's technically child abuse. You're abusing their child. It is child abuse. You can't do that. So you have to make sure you're managing their trickster at the same time in order to even prevent child abuse of their inner child. That's just reality. So make sure you guys don't forget that. A lot of people don't even realize how you can abuse people through their trickster function, and if you're not careful. Okay, yes, please bring me one. I am thirsty, like a sparkling water. Thank you. Okay. So then, next question is, what exactly is a God complex? I keep hearing about it. Do all types have this? No, not all types have this. But basically, the God complex, most people assume that it's TI inferior who has a God complex because they have the reputation of expecting everyone else to listen to them, but they don't listen to anybody because they're an expert thinking demon. But it's actually introverted judging types have the God complex. It can be really, really terrible in women, for FI child women and TI child women. It can be really bad. However, if you're in your masculine and in leading them properly, they let go of it super quick, because then they just relax and just let you, the man, handle it, and they don't have to worry about it, and the God complex or the superiority complex from the FI side just goes away. However, in men, that is not the case. It requires other man, because it is written, as iron sharpens iron, so does one man to another. So other men have to hold each other accountable and challenge each other, and it's through that sharpening, basically, that the superiority complex or the TI child God complex goes away. Because I've seen a lot of INFJ men out there, like, literally think that they're God, you know, especially when they're, like, playing Call of Duty and they get on the leaderboard, or they reach Inheritor rank in Halo Reach. I knew an INFJ who did that, and he thought he was the hottest shit ever. And I'm like, oh, look at you, bro, majoring in minor things. Shut the fuck up. And that was where I was iron sharpening his iron, basically. And he got really pissed, but then eventually, like, a couple years later, he thanked me for telling him that. So that's just an example. But yeah, it's basically when the introverted judging child function becomes really inflated, basically hella inflated, while simultaneously having no substance. And it's usually they do this to cover up their insecurity of their extroverted sensing inferiors or their extroverted intuition inferiors, because they're so afraid of abandonment or so afraid, they're afraid of rejection, or they're afraid of dejection, basically. Dejection is defined as never being a choice to begin with. No one even considers them as a choice. No one even considers including them in anything. And rejection is you make the offer to somebody else to be included in what they're doing, and then they reject you, basically. That's basically the difference. So there's a couple questions that come in. I want to see if they're relevant. Let's see here. I'm an INFJ, indulging. Okay. If the soul temple struggles with identity, what would be the mind temple struggle? No. That's still technically off topic. If Jesus was an INFJ and he had a God complex, Jesus did not have a God complex. Okay. Look, Jesus never actually claimed to be God. And if anyone argues that Jesus claimed to be God, that's only found in the Gospel of John. And the Gospel of John is the gospel that has the least historical backing, okay? Jesus never claimed to be God. I don't know why everyone says he did. He never actually did. If you actually read the Gospels, he never actually makes the claim. And then he never directly says it. He did not have a God complex. Now, people make the argument that he was being informative, but why would he be informative when his subconscious is an ESTP? He's not being informative. But everyone assumes that Jesus was being informative in the Gospel of John, when that's not true either. It's no. No. If you see a relevant question and I miss it, let me know. Because sometimes it's hard to see on the camera. Rose frequency. I saw that one, but yeah. Just from now on. INFJ male, understanding my ideas in the workplace environment. Well, the thing is that you have to be willing to ask other people their opinion on your ideas first, Mr. INFJ. So, okay, how can INFJs accept to get involved in what other people want if it doesn't align with what they want? Well, go ask those other people and find out why they want it. Ask why. Stop focusing on how to do it. Instead, take a moment for a second, breathe, and go ask them why they want to do that first. And then ask questions. That's really all you have to do. Just ask questions, okay? Again, watch the INFJ video in section 4 of the Ego Hacking Your Fear course, because it explains this at length. Did you watch that one yet?
Which one?
The INFJ Ego Hacking Your Fear yet?
I'm partially through it.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right. So how many skills can an SDUF INTJ master? Can INTJs master only just one skill or possibly unlimited skills with consistent practice? Really, INFJs should be focusing on maybe 1, 2, or 3 main skills, basically, and then have a few secondary skills, but you have to stay focused on your best skills. It is written, whatever your hands find to do, do it with all of your might. And that's basically for the NI heroes of the world, focusing on that one skill. Yes, INTJs are jack of all trades, jack of all skills, master of all skills. The thing is that if they stop using a skill, they'll lose their mastery of said skill. There are many videos about this on the YouTube channel. You just have to search INTJ skill on my channel, and then you'll have a bunch of videos you can watch, and it'll explain exactly the answer to this question for free. So don't worry about that. Next question. This is a really interesting question. What are examples of things a 40-year-old ENTP man would say and not say to a woman he claims to like so much that would show his sincerity and his true intentions? Okay. Well, first of all, oh, the kitty wants to join us, but he can't come out. So, the INTP cat wants to be included, apparently. That is our cat, Onion, Mr. O, as we call him, or Mr. Onion. So, my big K sees him, and he's like, kitty! Anyway, but yeah, like, from a sincerity perspective, like, look, what octagram is this ENTP? Because the answer changes. If he's got TI masculine primary because he's UDSF, then he's going to be really rakish and he's going to tell you straight up that he wants you, basically, okay? If he's got introverted sensing masculine primary as a man, then he's going to be like the ideal lover, seductive style. So that's what how he would act. If he is introverted intuition, masculine primary, he's going to have a different seductive style entirely. So I would like to say more about that, but I'm not going to because that's actually core to the Real Love Language course that's about to be coming out. Pre-orders are going to be going out for it very soon. It will be releasing before Valentine's Day. It will be our premier course on relationships, sexual relationships, all the way and from a psychology perspective. So yeah, keep that in mind. It's a really, really big deal. And also going to be having a very interesting psychological explanation as to how and why women orgasm and how to actually facilitate orgasm for women. And let me tell you something, guys, it has nothing to do with how you use it. Okay? It really has nothing to do with that. So it actually has something else to do with a woman's psyche and how to work her psyche in such a way where that she actually has the ability to do that. All women can orgasm. The difference is that not all women have their psychological prerequisite met for them to be able to orgasm. We're going to be exploring that in the Real Love Language course. Trust me, you're going to want to get the course. It will change your life for the better, especially your sexuality. So make sure you guys heavily invest. So, all right, let's see. Next question is, how do bronze pairs exchange cognitive origins? A very complex question. What's really great is the answer to that question is ultimately the Rosetta Stone. The Rosetta Stone was talked about in the Ego Hacking by Text course in the masterclass specifically. So if you have the Ego Hacking by Text course, congratulations, that's great, but make sure you have bought the masterclass to go along with it so that you can get that as well. That's a really, really big deal. By the way, guys, we might be having a course, a New Year's course sale coming out very soon. Where we'll basically have all of our courses and all of our master classes in a bundle coming out very soon. Might be out this week, so look for that. Check that out for that deal. I think it might be out Saturday or Sunday, if I'm lucky, you know. So we'll see how that goes. Next question, how can an ENFJ woman lose weight and get in shape fast? Self-discipline. ENFJ women are statistically, out of all the types, to be fat. Most likely to be fat, other than INTP women. INTP women and ENFJ women, most likely. So basically, it's introverted sensing child and extroverted sensing child women are the most likely of all of the 16 types to be obese. And the reason why is because they really suck at performance or they really suck at self-discipline, and that's why. How can a woman lose weight and get in shape fast? Very easily. By going to ChatGPT and telling ChatGPT your height and your weight and then your and saying that you want to lose 1 pound of fat a week and how many times you actually work out in the gym doing weightlifting during the week. And it will tell you how many total calories you should be eating per day, how many grams of protein, fat, and carbs you should be eating per day. And then you just put that in your MyFitnessPal app as your targets, basically. And then go to like builtwithscience.com, buy their beginner program, and just do the beginner program for women. And then you're good to go. Or if you want to have something more specialized, go to kinobody.com and get the Greg O'Gallagher women's program, his booty program, basically. Women need to focus a little bit more on lower body instead of upper body. So if they're going to do like a 3-workout split per week, you want to do 2 lower body workouts and 1 upper body workout, basically. However, if you're a woman and you're afraid of doing upper body workouts, you're being foolish, because upper body workouts prevent your breasts from sagging, by the way. So you might want to figure that out. So yeah, we're giving tons of value tonight, spilling all the secrets. Okay, next question, and it's a book, and please don't send me books, guys, when you're asking questions. Quote, I'm an STUF INFP female, and I have a hard time trying to speak to people, not because I care about what they think. Great, that how nice and emasculating of you to say. But they don't really give me the time or undivided attention when I do speak. I struggle with this both at school, with my peer group, and at home with my ESTJ mother. How can I command someone's attention without them interrupting me? If that's a difficult question to answer, then I'll rephrase it to be, how do I accept or deal with people not giving me their undivided attention or interrupting me? Yeah, so basically what you do is that, first of all, you need to let go of your deadly sin of pride, right? And your deadly sin of sloth, and actually spend some time listening to other people so you have a reputation of being a good listener. And then you speak afterwards. You have to listen first before you speak. So keep that in mind. The other thing is, if you're an SDUF INFP female, your feminine primary function is actually extroverted feeling, okay? And extroverted feeling as a feminine primary function, you come off super, super caring, but because of that, you come off also very prideful, because you're leaning into your TI demon a little bit, which is why people end up interrupting you over time. So maybe you should like pay attention to that. So basically the key to being listened to is to first listen. So next question, how can an ESTJ and ISTP brother successfully run a construction business together? The ISTP needs to be the one performing the construction, and the ESTJ needs to be the one planning it, as well as basically handing all the office paperwork and all the plans and all the permits and all of the, like, anything has to do with paperwork or fish or codes or laws or anything like that. The ISTP needs to actually be focused on doing the sales piece as well as focused on doing the work. However, the ISTP needs to make sure that they never reveal that they are actually an owner. They need to always look like, if they hand out business cards, they should just have their title as installer. And then, like, if you have a problem with this deal or whatever, talk to the ESTJ, basically, so the ESTJ can protect the ISTP's FE inferior of being beaten up for price in a construction scenario. Make sure you do that every time. Next question. Hey, Chase, what are a few reasons NTJs bully people? It's usually because other people are either more capable than they are. It's jealousy, basically. It's jealousy of other people's reputations, other people's legacy, other people's success. And bullying other people helps them feel better about themselves because they don't have to be as jealous towards other people's success. That's the main reason. Next question is, how can I support my ISTJ grandfather as a female INFJ? Constantly help him be more comfortable, make him feel wanted, tell him you think highly of him. Basically, watch the How to Social Engineer ISTJs video on the YouTube channel, and also watch the 8 Rules for Loving ISTJs video on this YouTube channel. And there you go. Congratulations. Done. No problem. Okay, cool. And then next question is, how can an SDUF INTJ, which their masculine primary function is introverted thinking, not destroy themselves from the constant internal desecration? Is there such thing as too much modesty? No, there's not a such thing as too much modesty. Obviously, you have to take care of yourself at the end of the day. But seriously, you need to realize that possessions and materialism is nothing more than a burden, okay? And honestly, as you go in your life, you need to learn how to let go of materialism, because vainglory or popularity is completely fake and doesn't actually help you whatsoever. It's cheap and doesn't have any substance, and you will always feel empty and unsatisfied your whole life. You will find more satisfaction with owning as few possessions as possible and just being a person of skill instead of a person of stuff. That's basically the answer to that question. Next question is, how do you maintain subconscious focus as an ISTP? You do this by earning the right to be prideful, basically. You don't just be prideful because you're trying to cover overcompensate for your weaknesses. You just do. You just be who you are from that perspective. That's literally what you do. Go out of your way to be as humble as possible. Humility is not self-deprecation. Humility is proper evaluation of self, which basically means from an ICP perspective, you have to learn how to become your own source of self-acceptance. This is taught in the Introverted Feeling Demon lecture in the premium lectures section in the Journeyman section. And since you paid for the right to have your question answered on the stream, that means you're an Acolyte member, which means you already have access to that particular lecture. Go watch that lecture, as that will answer this question. All right, next question is, how to become more subconscious focused being an INFJ UDUF. Okay, so when you're an INFJ UDUF, you're very, very jealous of other people. And because of that, you're the one who's sucking up all of the gratitude in the room. You basically have to practice how to be grateful. If you're a UDUF INFJ, you're pretty suicidal. You're pretty depressed, basically. And the reality of the situation is that people are suicidal because they're ungrateful. That's actually the real reason. That's the real cause of suicide. It's ingratitude, basically. So you have to learn how to become grateful. There's actually a few apps that you can download on the app stores for free that actually give you little notifications and little gratitude assignments. And you just follow those gratitude assignments to practice gratitude. And that's literally how you maintain subconscious focus, or even gain subconscious focus as an INFJ, to get out of UDUF and into UDSF. However, if you are a UDUF woman, a real masculine man can lead you out of your unconscious focus and into your subconscious focus. If you are a UDUF INFJ man, you have to be around other men and have them, through their leadership, lead you out of your UDUF and into your UDSF side, basically. Next question is, how does your type and nurture affect musical enjoyment and preference or avoidance? It dominates it entirely. Your music tastes are absolutely determined by your type as well as your octogram. So I'm a UDUSF ENTP. One of my most favorite songs is Inner Universe, as played by Orga. And Orga is O-R-I-G-A. And it's literally just some cyberpunk music, intro music from Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex Season 1, essentially. That's all that is. Or, you know, like, I have a very peculiar taste in music. I love rave music. I love club music. But mostly rave, electronica, EDM, dubstep. My absolute favorite is drop. I love drop so much. So Brothel is one of my favorite artists of all time. Drop is just incredible. I love Hippie Sabotage as well. I also love 2 Feet, for example. But again, UDSF, ENTPs all like the same music. So that's why when people are sharing music, it's actually a camaraderie thing, because people look at music and they choose the music that they identify with. Actually, that's what shapes a person's music taste. So it's camaraderie that shapes music taste, not compatibility. So just to give you guys an idea as to how music taste actually works. So if you're a musician or an artist, the music that you create, you should be marketing that music specifically to your own type and your own octogram first and foremost, and then kind of expanding out to your quadra and your temple from there, and while ignoring the rest, basically. And that's how you can actually really do very well with your music career and actually move it forward. Okay, next question. How can Templars keep their attention on something, like also known as stop getting distracted by the squirrels? Basically, it's because what shapes a Templar's attention is the feedback that they get from other people, actually. You will never be able to stop getting distracted by the squirrels unless you have a purpose, and that purpose is derived from feedback that you get from other people. So if you're a Templar type, ENFJ, INFJ, ISTP, ESTP, if they're giving, if you're also around people who give you feedback, even negative feedback, because a lot of Templars, especially soul Templars, will not put themselves around people who give them negative feedback at all. They really won't. And the reason why is because if they're around people who give them negative feedback, they're forced to actually look at themselves in the mirror, and then they're forced to realize that they're actually a piece of shit. They have to eventually go through that process, but usually soul Templars and Templars in general actually spend their whole lives avoiding pain and avoiding negative feedback their whole life. And unless they're willing to face that negative feedback, then they'll never be able to keep their attention on something, essentially, because the feedback basically provides boundaries with which they're able to focus their NI and keep focus on something instead of actually attention, because Templar attention is not really worth as much as their focus. Their focus is everything, but they're not going to know what to focus on unless they are able to collect not only just positive feedback in their life or negative feedback, because negative feedback is how they shape themselves. That's how they grow through their failures, and it actually increases their performance, is actually through negative feedback. Positive feedback is like, oh, nice success, but that doesn't mean they're going to grow. They'll just keep doing that same thing over and over and over again, but that could actually stagnate and decay over time, and it's not actually related to growth. Yes? Yes. Absolutely, it does. Yeah, it heavily relates to the identity crisis, that negative feedback helps shape their identity as well. So yes, absolutely correct. And that's for soul Templars. For mind Templars, what would be the difference for that? They don't have as much of an identity crisis. It's more of an acceptance crisis, basically. It's more related to other people's judgments, whereas soul Templars are more about their own judgments of themselves to a point. So, but again, at the end of the day, it's all about feedback, you know, and especially the negative feedback. They really need to pay extra. They need to listen to negative feedback more often than positive feedback. It's really, really important that they do that without being self-deprecating, by the way, you silly Templars and your self-deprecations. Okay, next one is, it's been said that it's very difficult to get out of UDUF on your own. Yes. What types and octagrams are best to pull an INTP out of UDUF? Well, if it's an INTP woman, then that would be a compatible octagram in a masculine man who's leading her out of her UDUF. That's the best for her to do it. If you're a UDUF man, you have to either learn how to do it on your own, or you have to be around men who are better than you, basically, and more successful than you are, and learn from them. And that's how you can get out of UDUF and UDSF. UDUF people, though, are usually hyper-independent in general. And when they are hyper-independent, they create an echo chamber in their brain, which actually slows their own growth. This is why UDUF people, out of all of the 16 types, are actually mentally developmentally behind. They are developmentally behind, and they are actually stopping their mental development while they are in UDUF. You know, this includes, like, I know a few UDUF ENTPs with their masculine primary function being FI. These are men. And they still will not surround themselves very often, much less even listen to or even bother asking the opinions of men that are better than them. And so then they just stay stuck. They stay stuck in the UDUF perspective, and they have to be willing to humble themselves enough to actually seek out that that challenge from other men who are actually more successful than they are. Next question is, how can an ENFP woman become more grounded and desirable? That's really good. Basically, the answer to that question is ask other people how, find out what other people value. And this is really answered in the ENFP social skills lecture. I did the ENFP social skills lecture last month. It was really good, very fluid. I freestyled it. The other ones I didn't freestyle. It's the only lecture I freestyled. And as a result of freestyling, I think it's probably the lecture that has the most value so far in season 12, part two. You can watch season 12, part one for free here on YouTube or on the podcast, on Spotify, etc. But you would be able to learn the most from the ENFP video for social skills, because it's literally an ENFP woman becomes more grounded and desirable is literally as a result of developing those social skills, but also learning how to become more feminine. So you'd have to read all of the Zach Rohde books, Zakroeddee, those specific books, Irresistibly Feminine, Worthy Woman, Show Him Your Heart, and Inspire His Devotion, those four books specifically. And they're little booklets. They're actually really quick. You can probably read them in 2 days very easily. and an ENFP woman learning those skills, also joining our women's group on our Discord server. If you're watching this and you're not on our Discord server, you should be on our Discord server. It's discord.gg/egohackers. And then if you're a woman and you want to get involved in our women's group, which is our women's support group, I highly recommend you join. Just message Jolly or Stephanie or Lady Rose is good. You could also message Astro Bunny. She'll help you out. To get into the women's group, also known as the cartel of the mature feminine. That's what we call it. The reason why is because women are raising each other's value up together instead of competing with each other. We remove a question. We do go out of our way to eliminate female competition as much as possible, and instead create a culture of female togetherness and working towards a common goal of improving each other's values simultaneously. Like, you have a woman who's really bad at makeup, but she's really good at cooking, versus a woman who's really good at makeup, who's bad at cooking, and then they skill trade, basically, and then just make each other better. That's the environment that we're promoting for the women in our women's group. So next question is, how can you prevent being used by others as an SD, ENTJ, or ISFP, but still maintain healthy relationships with others? I know you'll mention bonds, not attachments, but it takes two to tango, and most are not willing to have bonds and aren't in the position where they can due to mass selfishness, so you're kind of screwed. I notice people consistently take advantage of me, and I usually either only notice it after it's happened, which is practically useless, or I know it's happening, but I'm too afraid to do anything about it. I know distancing myself from others isn't the answer either, and I don't want to be the price to pay for being taken advantage of. This is likely an ISFP, by the way. This is so informative. If I isolate myself, others, it also backfires. Huh? Oh, I know. It's a book. She wrote me a book. I unintentionally trust people who I shouldn't, and I stupidly take people's word all the time. I have a theory that a lot of people I know UIP, and therefore have used it as a weapon against me, to make me SDSF against my will or to take from me. How can you prevent this from happening? What a question. But basically, it has nothing to do with bonds. It has everything to do with not allowing other people. Like, you can't just be generous to just anybody, okay? You have to see people as investments. Are you getting a return on investment from them? And here's the thing, what if you're being delusional and not aware of the return investment you've already received? Or because you're an SE user, you forget other people's contributions to you. You forget the ROI that you have received from other people as well, which can actually cause you to be more abusive to them. But if your subconscious is developed, guess what? You have outward complacency, which means you are naive and people are taking advantage of your naivete. So before you invest in other people, ask other people what they think about those people you are investing in before you start investing. It's literally that simple. But that is the answer to that question. You have to utilize other human beings and stop trying to do everything yourself. Seriously. Next question is, what learning styles work best for ESFJs? How does Octogram adjust this, if at all? What other types would have similar types? Guys, when you're asking questions, keep it to just one question, please. Seriously, just keep it to one question. So ESFJ learning styles, in some cases, they're not really visual learners at all. They can read a book and just do it. They really can. They can see what other people are doing. Like, ESFJs are so good at learning. It's almost unfair. And in my opinion, ESFJs and ENTPs, out of all of the 16 types, specifically that dyad, that duo learns the quickest of all of the types consistently. ENTPs can take in a lot of information, but they don't necessarily know what to do with it, whereas ESFJs, they take in a little bit less information, but still a lot, but they know what to do with it for the most part. The problem is that they don't know what they want to do with it. That's the issue, right? Whereas the ENTP knows what they want to do with it, but they don't really know how to actually put it into practice in certain cases, because it's the rocking horse where there's a lot of movement but going nowhere, essentially. So ESFJs, you could just literally explain it to them. So I think they learn really well from audio. They really do. Audio, they're not exactly visual learners. They could just be told what to do and then they can do it. But the thing is that they also have to kind of learn how to do it themselves, but only after they actually see someone else do it ahead of time. So they like to see a demonstration and then do it themselves. And once they have that, they're pretty good to go from that perspective. And that's from a learning direction. I'm not really well versed on the specific learning styles. I'm not really that well versed in it, but the learning styles are determined or expressed by type, basically. ESFJs can have a rocking horse that's going nowhere. The difference is that ESFJs can't learn by themselves. That's another thing about ESFJs. They have to learn with somebody else, whereas the ESFJ or the ENTP is actually an independent learner. So next question is, how does INFJ go about finding and or choosing a niche for themselves, like for a skill, career, general commitment in life, an unconscious developed INFJ? Very easily. Allow yourself to chase your interests. Literally allow yourself to change your interests, but not all interests are good. Because remember, INFJs have the problem, more so than any of the 16 types, where they can major in minor things, okay? Majoring in minor things. And by majoring in minor things, they can never deal with those feelings of uselessness and those feelings of worthlessness that they carry with them everywhere they go. They have to major in major things. So an INFJ has to learn is that it's always better to aim high and miss than it is to aim low and hit, basically. You want to aim high and miss and keep aiming high and missing over and over and over and over. This is literally the key for INFJs to unlock the powers of the law of attraction, okay? Now, the law of attraction has two sides of the same coin. There's the NI side and the NE side. The NE side, so any users, so you have people teach law of attraction, like Tony Robbins, for example. He's always talking about that, or Eckhart Tolle, or Oprah. You know what's really interesting about those people talking about the law of attraction is that they don't benefit. They explain the law of attraction because they're projecting for an NI user to use it. But they themselves don't actually use the law of attraction themselves, because from their perspective, what they do is that they just produce a lot of magnetism. And, by making themselves desirable, and then the universe will present to them opportunities, basically. That's what happens. Whereas the NI user is a little bit different. The NI user is trying to get to a point where you have absolute focus, essentially. And you are what you gaze upon. That is basically what an NI user is. So you have to make sure that your gaze as an NI user, as an INFJ, is focusing on the big things instead of the small things. And aiming high and miss, and then you keep doing it, and you practice aiming high over and over and over again, and you never give up, and you have the guts to never give up. And that is how you basically unlock the power of the law of attraction for yourself. For those of you out there who say that the law of attraction is an evil teaching, I actually, there is actually some verses in the Bible that are identical to the law of attraction. Just look it up on Google. So for all of you Christian folk out there who say it's a demonic teaching, it's actually in the Bible as well. There's specific verses talking about it. It's not hard. So stop being judgmental assholes about it. Next question is, what does enmity between the body and the soul temple look like? Also, not a question, just an observation, but have you noticed the story of Star Wars prequels is just the heart temple, Palpatine and Anakin rebelling against the authority of the mind temple in the form of the Jedi Council? Absolutely, and I've delivered entire lectures on this concept. Absolutely, I have. I guess it is a question. Yeah, it is a question. Keep it to one question, please. So, well, the any user of law of attraction, the any user version, is gain as much life experience as possible to increase your level of magnetism. And because you have a ton of life experience, you're literally doing everything that life has to offer and aiming high consistently with your life experience and aiming to get new experiences that you never had and putting yourself outside of your comfort zone. It increases your magnetism, it increases your gravitas to the point where the universe will throw even more opportunities at you. And because it wants to, you're actually cultivating the desire of the universe towards yourself, basically. And that is the expert intuition, the law of attraction way. Okay, that's how that works. So what does enmity between body and soul temple look like? Well, here's the thing. Body temple has this perspective that achievements determine character, versus the Soul Temple way, character determines achievements, essentially. So here's the thing. Soul Temple often are high achievers. Soul Temple's high achievers, but they lack character. Versus Body Temple, they are actually usually low achievers, but with high character. This is why Body Temple doesn't usually actually care so much about high character, because they already have, Body Temple already has intrinsic character built into it already, because it utilizes the character that they already have intrinsically to extrinsically create achievements, also known as legacy, okay? So what they do is they look at each other and they judge each other for the thing that which they lack, or the thing that they actually want. So like, there's this built-in envy, this built-in jealousy between these two temples. The Soul Temple, they're high achievers. And the Body Temple is like, how is it you are high achievers, you know, but you lack character? Versus the Soul Temple is like, how is it? Or no, it's the other way around. Excuse me. The Soul Temple is looking at the Body Temple is like, how is it like you go out of your way to achieve? You're never going to be able to achieve without having higher character. But then they're just projecting. You know, that really becomes the source of that basically becomes the source of criticism or enmity between the two. Like, so the Soul Temple ends up having a lot of achievements, but they lack character. The Body Temple has a lot of character, but lacks achievements, basically, because that's they're seeking legacy or they're seeking character, and they're seeking it because they lack it, basically. And they're seeing what the other person has, but they're seeing what, like, how can you have that thing when you lack this other thing? Because both these two temples believe that achievements and character, wait a minute, FI, character, which is on axis with TE, achievements, right? That's why. That's why they don't like each other, really. Because it's like, oh, you're seeking out character. You want to be a better person, but you have all these achievements, and you achieve all of that because you're corrupt. And that's the Body Temple's problem with the Soul Temple. The Body Temple is pointing out to the Soul Temple that you're corrupt, and you only achieved because you took advantage. You took advantage of other people, basically. That's what the Body Temple is calling out the Soul Temple for. The Soul Temple, however, is calling out... well, you should have, you're not achieving because, you know, your character could be better, you know, from that point of view, you know. So I really hope that that answers the question. I'm trying to see a little bit more about the Soul Temple versus, yes? Okay, yeah, I'll get to that question. So yeah, Body Temple is calling out the Soul Temple corruption. Soul Temple is basically calling out the value, the actual value of the achievements of the Body Temple, because it's like, oh, well, if you're people of great character, why is your achievements suck? Why is the quality of your achievements so low? You know, why is the quality of your legacy so low? Because Soul Temple, it's easy for Soul Temple to have a legacy, but it's hard for the Body Temple to have a legacy. So it's like, well, shouldn't you have higher quality achievements? I thought you guys had really good character. And if you have really good character, that means you have higher quality achievements, right? So that's literally the criticism that's being offered against those two, essentially. So, okay. Let's go up to chicks. Could it be also our God functions have... Nope. Okay. What? Is that why type representing Body Temple's ISTJ? No. The ISTJ is in the Soul Temple. Like, the Body Temple is already, the soul... Oh, actually, yes. I realize what you're saying there, Chick. The answer is yes. Yes. The answer is yes. That is correct. I'm having issues figuring out if I'm actually an INFJ or an ISTP. How do I find how could I get to the correct answer? By going to howtotypeyourself.com and buying our course, How to Type Yourself, for $68. It's still pre-order pricing. We're keeping the pre-order pricing up for just a little bit while longer before it gets changed. And then you will learn how to type yourself properly after you take that course. So take the course. Like, literally do that. Like, that's what you do. So, all right, folks, that's it for questions tonight. We did like 30 plus questions. Thank you all for the additional side questions for the stream. Thank you all for watching and listening. And I'll see you guys in the next Acolyte Q&A stream. For February 2024. See y'all later.